Right now, we welcome in Keith Law from ESPN.com. Hi, Keith. Scott and Jeremy here. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good, Keith. Any notes from the Futures game this year?
Well, the Orioles sent Manny Machado and Jonathan, I guess it's Scope, who were both very impressive. Machado is a guy who was obviously on my radar dating back to the draft. It was my first look at Scope, and I think once he settles in at a position, I'd probably guess third base rather than second base, he's got a chance to be a pretty significantly above-average bat and has plenty of arm to profile at the position, too.
How about timetable on Machado? What would you guess? Where he was drafted, his age, everything?
He looks like he's a full 2 years away.
Okay.
I mean, I think that's realistic. You know, could he pop up in the second half of 2013? Yeah, that's about right. 2014 might be the first time you'd pencil him in as the everyday, maybe opening day starting shortstop.
Talking to Keith Law here on the Scott Garceau Show. Keith, a lot of talk about Andy McPhail and the job he's done with this team. Can you kind of give us your perspective being here 4 years and where they were and where they're at right now? Because at the major level, looking at the way the Orioles are playing, everything seems kind of doom and gloom.
Yeah, well, it's a bad club. And I think I said before the season, I thought it would be a bad club. They went out and spent a lot of money on veterans this offseason. I don't know if that was McPhail or if that was actually ownership wanting to do that. But either way, it was clearly not the right move for the franchise. And now what you see is a big league club that's bad and doesn't look like it's going anywhere because they've brought in all these veteran players who are not really going to contribute towards the future. But the bigger question I have about what's going on there with the big league club and the farm system is just that they have not managed to develop any of these extremely talented players they've brought into the organization. They drafted Matt Wieters, and everyone says it's a brilliant pick, myself included. They draft Brian Mattis, and he gets hurt. One of a long list of guys in the Orioles organization who've either hurt their shoulders or just otherwise lost velocity without much explanation. I don't know if it's just a run of horrible luck there or if there are actual problems on the player development side, but they need to get some answers. You can't keep adding this much talent. They're about to add Dylan Bundy to that mix.
Mm-hmm.
And
so,
then have these guys constantly – you can't put this much money in, draft high, and have the guys not pan out.
Yeah.
That is a recipe for 10 years of 100 losses.
So basically what you're saying is at least recent history with Joe Jordan and the drafts haven't been terrible, but there's something about after they're drafted, what happens to them before they get
exactly
up here to Baltimore.
Right. Most cases, I was not totally on board with the Hopgood pick, but at the same time, I didn't think it was a horrible pick. I had him ranked about 20th in that draft.
Yeah.
I just wouldn't have taken – in that spot, I didn't think he was the best high school arm on the board, but it's not like they took a fourth rounder there either. But they've made other picks where I agreed wholeheartedly. And, I mean, I thought Wieters was it was the obvious pick, but somebody actually has to make the obvious pick. And I thought he'd be a superstar really right up until he got to the big leagues. Some of these guys are flaming out at the big leagues. A couple of them are flaming out a little bit before that, particularly with the pitchers getting hurt. Something that they're doing is wrong. And it's probably more than one thing. If this isn't just bad luck, hitters aren't panning out, but pitchers aren't panning out. And the pitchers in particular, for this many pitchers to get hurt, if you're Andy McPhail, you have to take the step back and treat it as if you are responsible for it. Maybe it's bad luck, but you can't just sit back and blame it on bad luck. You have to sit down with your organization and say, what could we possibly be doing wrong to cause this many talented pitchers to get hurt or just flat out lose velocity?
Keith, in the cases of Mattis and Britton come to mind, those guys came through and looked like plus pitchers at every level. Got here, looked like plus pitchers, and it's still very early for Britton. He started 6-1 this year.
Oh yeah, I'm not worried about Britton because
Mattis is the more the head scratcher, I guess.
Yeah, Mattis is a huge concern because he gets hurt and it's not supposed to be serious, and he comes back 6 weeks later. And he's missing like 3 or 4 miles an hour on the fastball. His fastball's down a full grade or more than that.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, he's getting smacked around, which is exactly what you'd expect. He's trying to pitch with below-average stuff or with a below-average fastball at this point. And every time they run him out there and he's sitting at 87, 88, I'm sort of scratching my head and thinking, are they just making it worse? Because if there is something wrong and you're trying to send this guy out to pitch, he's going to make it worse. If he's hurt, he's going to get more hurt the more that he pitches.
Physically and mentally, too, yeah.
Right, because then suddenly he's changing his approach, and maybe he starts trying to, he puts more effort into it, he's overthrowing, he changes to throw more breaking stuff, which can be worse on the elbow. This can go wrong a bunch of different ways. I don't know the answer. I don't know that this is anything worse than just one of the most horrible runs of health luck that I could remember. But you have to treat it like there is some underlying disease here and try to find the cure.
I agree with you, but in some ways, because development seems to be an issue, but yet some of these guys have exceeded on each level in their development and then got here and something goes wrong. So, yeah, it's somewhat of a mystery, but you're right. When you've had as much bad luck and bad play as the Orioles have, you got to investigate everything.
Hey, Keith, I want to ask you about the Major League level and free agents. Clearly fans here tired of waiting, 14 consecutive years of losing, as it looks like it's going to continue. And they're always wondering about, is it tough to bring free agents into a ball club that's losing? Is it even smart to go out and try to sign guys to long-term deals? Clearly a gaping hole at first base here that's been here for a while. Everybody's wanting Prince Fielder, wanting them to make a run at him. What's your take on the Orioles, and is it smart for them to go out and pay money for somebody when they may not be winners for a few more years, or do they have to draw fans back in and go out and try to, you know, sign some long-term guys?
The only thing that will draw fans back in is winning, and I don't mean winning five more games. I mean winning 85 to 90 games and looking like you're at least challenging for a playoff spot, and the Orioles will not be able to do that strictly through free agency. They're not. No, I don't know if there's any club that could spend enough money, unless we're talking about maybe the Yankees and they walk into free agency with $100 million available. But even then, it's hard to take a bad club and turn it into a winner strictly through free agency. The Orioles do not have problems attracting free agents to Baltimore. All they have to do is pay more than anybody else. But paying more than anybody else is a really bad strategy unless your team is already pretty good. And the free agent you acquire brings you from 86 or 87 wins up to 91 wins. When you're a 70-win club, or worse, going out and acquiring that big free agent just to get to 75 wins doesn't make that much of a difference. It's not going to make much of a difference at the box office, and obviously it's not going to put you any closer to contention. So they kind of tried to do this last offseason. They spent a lot of money on some short-term deals for free agents. I think by and large that hasn't really worked out. They do have one very tradable asset in J.J. Hardy, who it sounds like they're going to sign to a long-term deal, which is, again, the wrong move. They should put him out there and try to get some young prospects who are more likely to be part of the next good Orioles club. Other than that, I don't think the strategy worked out this past offseason, and they've got to try to go in a different direction.
Now, Hardy's an interesting case because both sides, the Orioles and I think Hardy and his agent, suggested maybe they could get something done during the All-Star break. Nothing has happened up to this point. I think Buck likes him, would like to have him here. But if you come to that point where you understand that he's probably not going to re-sign, I guess you move him, right? You can't just let him walk. I mean, is the draft choice compensation any good?
Now, you know what? Don't bank on draft choices. Think about it. That draft pick, assuming you get the two draft picks, which could be it's a sandwich pick, and it's either a late first rounder, could be a second rounder, could even be a third rounder. I think it was the Yankees signed A.J. Burnett the same winter they signed Sabathia and Teixeira, and so the Blue Jays got a comp pick and a third-round pick for Burnett after Ricciardi refused to trade Burnett, saying, we'll just take the draft picks instead. So you don't wait on draft picks.
That's a crapshoot, yeah.
When you've got a desirable, and I mean, to say nothing of how long it takes those draft picks to actually get to the big leagues, you've got other options here. Milwaukee needs a shortstop in the worst way. San Francisco needs a shortstop in the worst way. Neither team is particularly flush in the farm system, but they can give you something of value, particularly San Francisco. San Francisco has two, three guys who, if I'm Danny McPhail, I would love to target potentially. And for San Francisco, the difference between what they're running out there at short now and J.J. Hardy, that might be three wins between tomorrow, say, and the end of the season. So it's pretty significant. They might actually be willing to give up a top-end prospect for Hardy. I would much rather do that than give 3 years and market value or something close to market value to a shortstop who's having a really good year that's out of line with the rest of his career, and by the way, is rarely plays a full season. He's really only played two full seasons since he got into pro ball in the first place.
Yeah, he had two good years with Milwaukee, 27, 28 homers, I think.
Yep.
And then he's battled some injuries.
And so maybe he gets back to that. I mean, you're seeing flashes of it this year. Maybe he can maintain this level. He's certainly at an age where it's possible, but do you want to bet on him not hitting like he hit in the last 2 years, but hitting like he's hit in the first 4 months of the season, and staying healthy? He does not have a great track record of staying healthy. Some guys are just more injury prone than others. If you want to guess of whether or not a player is going to stay healthy for the next 3 years, the best indicator you can look at is whether he stayed healthy in the last three, 4 years. And I think the answer with Hardy is he's a risk. He's a risk to get hurt again, and he's a performance risk as well.
Talking to Keith Law of ESPN and, of course, Scouts Inc. here on the Scott Garceau Show. Keith, as far as the Orioles go, this question or this word gets brought up all the time, untouchables. Do the Orioles have any with the way they're playing? Are there certain guys that they have to build around for their future?
I don't think so. I mean, I think the guys who you would have said maybe before the season are untouchables. Weider's untouchable. Is Mattis untouchable? Is Britton untouchable? I mean, they're clearly not, right? The Matt Weiders we see, as much as I thought Matt Weiders would be a superstar, and on some level still think that the ability is in there for him to be a superstar, he's not. And we've got a couple years of major league data right now. It says, you know, maybe he's not going to be one. Maybe he's never going to be one in Baltimore. But the issue with Weiders, Mattis, Britton, Tillman, you're not going to get much for those guys anyway. So the guys you typically call untouchable, the young players you want to build your roster around, none of these guys has that much value in the first place. Hardy should have some value. Markakis, I know some clubs that like Markakis and would love to see what he could do if he got out of Baltimore. There's a feeling maybe he's just frustrated there. The team's been so bad for so long with him. He made a longer-term commitment to them. Maybe you get him out and those tools, which you saw earlier in his career, they lead to kind of a rejuvenation if he gets into a winning environment. Well, if you get an offer on a guy like that, you got to at least listen.
Yeah, that was one of the points I was trying to make yesterday, and I don't know if you agree with this, but typically if you're trading, you know, a young prospect or a guy that just became major league ready, like a Mattis or a Britton, if you're trading those guys, you're probably trading it for an established player already that's going to put you over the top.
Right.
And if you're trading a guy like Markakis, you're probably trying to get something back similar to the guys I was just talking about.
Right. Now, could you trade Weiders? I'm not saying they should trade Weiders. But speaking hypothetically, if you put Weiders out there, if somebody calls on Weiders, says, you know what, we're going to give you two pretty good prospects because we think we can take Weiders and turn him into the top five overall pick that he was a couple years ago, you got to listen. You have to at least explore the possibility because maybe you can get two good pieces for one when the one piece, at least so far, hasn't lived up to your expectations. But it's also not that likely. What's a lot more likely is you put the word out to other teams, Hardy, Reynolds, Lee, Vlad, Markakis, even Jones, any piece in the bullpen, we'll talk about anybody. We're not going to guarantee they're not on the trade block. We don't have to move anyone. You don't want to sound desperate, but we will at least listen to your offers. Try to generate a market so you've got multiple teams after you, and you can potentially play one off for each other a little bit, and then trade anyone where you think you're getting more value in return than what you're potentially giving up. Or, you know, in the case of Hardy or any of the other impending free agents, it's just the value of those draft picks at the end of the year.
All right, Keith, give us a name or two that could be a call-up in the second half, have some impact. Desmond Jennings, Kipnis, who do you have on the radar that could do something in the second half?
Yeah, I think both of those guys have got to get the call fairly soon. Kipnis, probably as soon as they feel like Chisenhall is settled there at third base, Cleveland will probably call Kipnis up and play him at second. I have to think Matt Moore, at some point,
okay,
there will be an opening in Tampa Bay's rotation through injury or non-performance. Jeff Niemann's obviously been very up and down this year, and I don't think he's a great bet to stay healthy. Matt Moore's the best pitching prospect in the minors right now, and he could come up and probably be a third or fourth starter in almost any rotation in baseball. And I think he'd come up and have a pretty immediate impact, even if he's got to work on, you know, say, the finer points of fastball command or learning how to set up and put away big league hitters. He's got three above-average pitches, fastball up to 98, knockout breaking ball. He'll accidentally miss enough bats to be helpful.
Keith, thanks a lot. I was good chatting baseball with you.
My pleasure, guys.
Keith Law from ESPN.